Can you give me some relief?
By the man that you can now find on Parler under the screen name Cuck Crusher 420. Brian, how are you doing this week, my friend?
How did you know I signed up for a Parler account?
You know what? The internet, it's very tough to hide anything. And I have people that can track things down based on, you know, some of the things that you're very much interested in. And somehow we all just seem to find this somehow. So
that's all I got to say. But you and I never spoke about Parler.
We didn't, no. But, I, again, as 51% owner of this podcast, it is important for me to keep track of what the minority ownership is doing to make sure it's not going to harm the brand. So consider that your one and only warning.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I'm gonna let that slide.
All right. Fair enough. Great week coming up here. Brian already showing off his Ron and Brian podcast mug. And if I may, I am keeping warm tonight thanks to my Ron and Brian podcast hoodie. Oh, look at, let me get these little tassels out of the way here so you can see the nice logo. That's right. The Ron and Brian hoodie available if you are a Patreon subscriber. So you can do that by going to ronandbrianpodcast.com up in the upper right corner. Click on Become a Patron. Billy, we did hear from Patreon. You should be receiving your hoodie in the next week or two. So enjoy that just in time for the cold winter weather. Brian, have you tried on your hoodie yet?
I've already had it framed.
Oh.
It is never to be worn. I will never sully my Ron and Brian podcast sweatshirt with my own body oils. It needs to be put up on my Ron and Brian shrine. I've got it right now covering 49% of one of the walls in my bedroom. It's a shrine, if you would, to a time where I can honestly say I found the most emotionally satisfying periods of my life.
Excellent. Well, It's a trip down memory lane, and we always love when you get overly emotional, but not too emotional. Let's get the drinking going, though.
Drink of the week.
Na zdrowie.
Salud.
Drink of the week.
Sláinte.
Drink of the week. Drink of the week.
Well, Brian and I both have a very special drink this week. A little something called Biden Blue Champagne to help celebrate our new president-elect. This is a very special vintage. It goes to those who were able to cast 500 or more votes in this past presidential election. Brian, I know you just got in there at 502. I believe I was out around 683. So it's a well-deserved victory, stuffing the ballot box in Pennsylvania and Arizona. So cheers to you, my friend.
No, cheers to you. Pennsylvania was a state that we all needed. It was a state that had to go blue this time around if Biden was going to take over. I know you did your part. You stepped it up. You went door to door, neighborhood to neighborhood. I know you were very active in northern Philly, knocking on doors, offering $20 for people to give you their mail-in ballot. The numbers came in. Numbers showed exactly what we were looking for. And it was a beautiful thing.
And one thing they said, because it is a Biden bouquet, you really got to get in there. Really got to sniff the wine. Just, oh, smells like Delaware, Brian. Smells like an Amtrak train in Delaware. Hold on.
So good. So good.
Oh, so good. So good. We will obviously be talking about the election a little bit more as we get deeper into the show. There's a lot of drinking going on across the country, some in celebration, some in sorrow. There was a long line at the Fine Wine and Spirit Shop in downtown Philly on Saturday, but we'll talk about my trip down to Philly on Saturday. In the meantime, we got to get into a little bit of racism.
This week in
racism.
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 So not as much racism in the news as normal. Everybody, again, hopefully tied up with the election, not being able to hate on each other as much as possible. But we do have three stories that we are going to cover this week. First, in racing, NASCAR has indefinitely suspended driver Josh Rayum from Rayum Brothers Racing Team for an anti-Semitic post that he made on social media. There are no records of the post, but it apparently was of an evening snack that Rayum had with a swastika drawn on it. I've heard potentially a toaster strudel with the icing done in a swastika. Rayum posted an apology on Twitter saying that the photo was, quote, taken out of context. He went on to say that he has a diverse family and team and once lived in West Africa for 13 years.
No, 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 no. You do not get to say something wildly racist and then point out, I've got a black friend, so therefore I can't be racist. It doesn't work that way. That shit may have been able to be passable 20 years ago, but now sitting there showing a photo of the black guy at work that you talked to, that doesn't make it better.
All right. Quick question, Brian. What's better, toaster strudel or Pop-Tart?
Oh, toaster strudel.
Good
call. Hands down.
Yeah.
Pop-Tarts were good probably in the early 80s. Trash. They're trash now.
All right. We had talked last week about Louisiana State Police and how they're being investigated for systematic racism. Now we get to go to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, where three Baton Rouge police officers are on leave this week after a confrontation with LSU football player Coy Moore. According to Moore, a freshman wide receiver for the team, he was approached by the officers who pulled their weapons on him, assuming he had a gun or drugs. They also attempted to unzip his pants in search of a weapon. The incident only ended once the officers found out that Moore was on the LSU football team. Police Chief Murphy Paul said that an internal investigation into the confrontation is underway. And of course, the officers are on the ever popular administrative leave with pay.
Can we rewind back into that article when they looked inside of his pants for a weapon?
They attempted to see if he had a gun in his jeans, apparently.
Does the article state that they were looking for a gun, or does it say that they went into his pants looking for a weapon?
According to the quote by Coy Moore, they said he attempted to unzip his pants to look for a weapon.
You're assuming that they're talking about a gun.
I'm thinking
that this reminds me of a movie I saw when I was in college called Caged Heat in the Bayou. It was a story of a northern football player who goes down to Louisiana. It was a fake school to try out for their football team. Lo and behold, he ends up getting arrested, and apparently there's a lot of sex going on in the local jail. Twosomes, threesomes, bisexual orgies, porn. The last scene was just crazy.
Fair enough. Can I get back to the racism, though? All right, thank you. Going out to the West Coast, San Francisco, a school board president has resigned after his wife posted racist tweets about Vice President-elect Kamala Harris. John Venverlo had been president of the board at Los Lomitas Elementary School District in Menlo Park. On Sunday, his wife, Meredith Phillips Venverlo, posted a tweet in response to a question about Harris's qualifications, stating, quote, all she needs to be qualified is a black pussy, no brain needed. She also retweeted a post from Harris in which the VP-elect said that she hoped every girl watching her sees America as a country of possibilities, to which Van Verlo responded, "The possibilities are endless for little girls who whore themselves to the top." Van Verlo issued an apology on Monday in which she stated that she was a Trump supporter, and her words were written in a, quote, moment of disappointment. She also mentioned that she was on a medication for a neurological disease and had lowered the dosage due to a scheduled hospitalization. She said, "I believe that the change in medicine reduced my judgment between right and wrong when I made the posts."
I thought the bitch was white.
It's amazing how just adjusting that medicine can just really bring out that racism in it.
All right. Understood. Understood.
That's all. Wow. I thought you'd have more on that.
I love, how do I put this politely? I love when people get unhinged over something that really impacts their life in a very minimal way.
Right.
The vice president is plays a very small role in your day to day. Unless you've just been elected a 79-year-old white man as president, and you realize that he probably will not last 8 years.
More than likely. We'll be lucky for the four. Why do they always point out Kamala's black heritage? Why never the Indian part? Why never the Asian American part?
Oh, that's because people are less racist towards Indians than they are to Jamaicans. Plain and simple.
All right. I'll take your word on it.
Do you disagree?
No, I'm not disagreeing. I'm going to take your word on it. And let's keep rolling with Beef of the Week.
Okay. Ron and Brian's Beef of the Week.
Brian, what is bothering you this week?
All right. One of the things that I take very seriously is copyright infringement. It is supporting artists. It is supporting art creators and ensuring that that people's money goes towards the people that create the art that we absorb and we appreciate so much. Not only am I a proud supporter of musicians across the board, I pay for all of my music. I buy albums. I buy T-shirts, merch, puzzles, jigsaw puzzles, if you would, whatnot. I also pay for streaming services. I think it's important that. Why are you laughing?
I have no idea. Just please continue.
I pay for streaming services. I pay for a Netflix account. I pay for a Hulu account. I pay for ESPN Plus. I pay for Disney Plus because I want to be able to enjoy entertainment, and I want to be able to enjoy it knowing that I'm doing it in a way where the artists are being compensated fairly for their art. It's a reasonable comment, correct?
I mean, I think our listeners are implying that they get the point as well, that you can get to the heart of the matter, the beef of the beef, if you will.
Understood. So the setup has already been accomplished.
I think so.
I had a friend this week who I would consider a close friend. Reached out to me out of the blue. I believe it was on a Friday or a Saturday night. I think it was Friday, actually, but I could be wrong. Just reached out to me out of the blue and said, "Hey, can I get your Disney Plus password?"
I believe, to be fair, this friend's wife reached out to you and asked for the Disney Plus password.
Could be true, but I understand in the way that I, couples that I'm friendly with, I treat as one entity.
Understood. But you give the male more credence than the female. So maybe there's some misogyny hidden deep under you. I'm just throwing
none whatsoever.
I'm interrupting. I apologize. Please get back to your.
No, please do not project your dislike of women onto me. To make a long story short, I had a close friend of mine, somebody that I trust, I respect, reach out in the hopes of obtaining my password for free so they can watch The Mandalorian, despite the fact that they do not have a Disney Plus account, they are not paying for it, and they simply want to steal the art that has been created. And it really hurt my feelings. The fact that it wasn't even asked as a please, can you do us a favor? It was, hey, can I get your Disney Plus password? It was really offensive. So my beef this week are people who use me for my streaming service subscriptions.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, if you that's the man you want to be, I don't blame you. I think it's a valid beef.
You think so? You think it's a valid beef?
I mean, I'm not going to invalidate your feelings. I'm not going to.
Thank you.
You are speaking your truth.
I am.
And I'm not
truth to power, by the way.
Right. I'm not going to interrupt that. Well, Brian, my beef this week, Brian, trees, most specifically the damn trees in my backyard, literally 2 hours cleaning off the deck, raking everything else. We get a big rainstorm. Everything's covered again. I hate the fall. Like, I like the cool weather, hate the trees, hate the leaves. Just, I've ordered a big old leaf vacuum off of Amazon. Going to see if that takes care of things.
You're looking for something that sucks very powerfully?
Something that I can plug into a wall, something that's got some suction to it.
Why don't you call your wife?
It's really not nice. Not nice at all. Sorry. Were you going to say something else? You were leaning in like it was something to talk about. Fair enough. A wise choice. This is an After Dark, by the way, in case you haven't realized. This is the main podcast that goes out to the bulk of our list.
It's not After Dark?
Not as of yet. It's going to be lit After Dark, I will tell you that, because we're drinking some champagne here. And if you're a Patreon member, you will get to experience that. If you're not, once again, go to ronandbrianpodcast.com. Sign up. We will get you the link prior to 9:30 tonight.
Where's the no bumper? You want this
little ticker that says visit ronandbrianpodcast.com?
There you go.
Brian, it is time for NFL Locks of the Week. Again, kudos to you for yet another 2-0 week. You were looking at that Patriots line. They were favored by 7. You were like, the Jets are going to be the Jets, and they're going to lose this game, but I think they can cover. Sure enough, Patriots only win by 3 points. Did you watch that game? Because it was a very Jet-like loss they did.
Did not watch a play.
All right. And then you had Arizona favored by 4.5 over Miami. You were like, you know what? It is still Tua time. Give me Miami plus 4.5. They didn't even need them. Miami wins outright by 3, 34-31. Kudos.
Listen, to me, they were obvious picks. I don't even feel week 9 was rather simple, really easy. I can't take much. I can't take much pride in going 2-0 again. What I actually was impressed with was your pick of the Cowboys, having lost their quarterback, going into Pittsburgh, getting 14 points against the unbeaten Ben Roethlisberger led Pittsburgh Steelers. You said, give me Dallas. Definitely going to cover. They may even win the game. This was one that I did watch most of. Steelers eking out a late win, 24-19, not covering, though. That gave you a win. And then it was just a blowout in Tampa Bay. Saints getting 4.5, won the whole game by 35, 38-33. You even said last week in the episode that this was the week we were really going to see Tom Brady when he is pressed up against a playoff-level defense. Scoring 3 points, that is not going to get you a Super Bowl run. Again, 9 weeks in a row, you went 2-0. Congratulations. And just so that people don't think that we are just throwing out these picks, what I did was I went onto mybookie.ag and I bet a parlay with the four picks that we made last week. Put $250 down, and I was very happy. I won a little bit over $1,000 last week.
Listen, if you've got the cojones to make the bets, you can make some money.
And so, we're not fucking around. We are not fucking around over here.
Who do you like this week, Brian?
Ooh, I see some easy ones here. This week, I picked the Raiders are laying 4.5 against the woeful Denver Broncos. That team's going to be high off the weed from Colorado. And then this one, I found a perplexing line. Arizona Cardinals laying 2.5 against the 7-3 Buffalo Bills, taking the Bills and the points. Ron, back to you.
All right. I like Miami. I'm sticking with Tua time. You made money on Tua the last 2 weeks. I'm picking up that bet this week, taking Miami -2 against the visiting LA Chargers. And then this, I had to look at the line twice. You've got the Minnesota Vikings going into Chicago, playing the Bears, and favored even at 3-5, favored against the 5-2 Bears. Bears are getting 2.5 points at home, taking that every day of the year, putting all of your money on it and my money.
Okay.
Next. And I really bet with your head, not over it.
Yeah. I mean, the lesson here is don't wager anything you cannot afford to lose.
Listen, however, those checks aren't coming, so you got to be careful at times.
But these bets I wouldn't even consider this gambling.
No?
I mean, we each have gone 2-0 for 9 weeks in a row. And I can't legally guarantee you that we are going to win again in week 10. But I'm putting my money behind where my bets are. I feel good.
Sorry, I'm just sniffing more of this Biden blue champagne. You really you pick up some hints of the hair gel he uses. I even I smell some sunglasses in there.
Does it smell like a 22-year-old unpaid female intern?
It smells like no malarkey, Brian, is what it smells like.
Oh, that's interesting.
Very interesting. Well, as we have said before, and obviously all of you know, despite all of the rhetoric out there, the election has finished. Joe Biden crossed the threshold of 270 electoral votes and is the president-elect. I don't know about up there in New York, it was fairly insane here in Philadelphia on Saturday after they called, I believe it was when they called Arizona for him. Or I'm trying to think, what state, or did they call Pennsylvania and that push?
Pennsylvania was the one that did it.
So when they called Pennsylvania, there was chaos in a good way. A lot of partying going on in the streets.
Walk me through it. Walk me through what, because it must have been a very interesting time to be in Pennsylvania. Somehow Pennsylvania has become one of the main key states that seems to be on the road or the path to the magical 270 number. If you can get Pennsylvania, you are going to become the president. Both Trump and Biden put a lot of efforts into Pennsylvania. This was a state that all the pundits said was going to go blue in 2016. Trump was able to win it in a quite surprising manner. And this time around, it was up for grabs. Early poll numbers in Pennsylvania were coming in pro-Trump before they started counting the mail-in ballots, and then suddenly it was a game changer. But for about 3 days, most eyes, political eyes in the country were focusing on Pennsylvania because it basically was, with its 20 electoral votes, it was pretty much accepted that if Biden can take Pennsylvania, he's got the presidency. As somebody who was living in Pennsylvania that week, what was it like?
Well, you know, and as you said, you know, a lot of people were anticipating that it would have been, you know, heavy Trump voting on election night, with that lead being cut into as the mail-in ballots and dropped and provisional ballots and everything were counted. There was, I want to stay in the ballpark of 2.2 million mail-in ballots cast in the state of Pennsylvania. About 1.4 million of them were from registered Democrats. And the challenge, I think, for the state was that by law, they were not allowed to start opening those ballots until 7 a.m. on election day. The Democrats in the state legislature had tried to change the law to, you know, because of the heavy mail-in, to allow the state to start counting the ballots early. Unfortunately, the legislature is led by the GOP. They blocked it. So that's really why you weren't able to see a lot of counting taking place on the day itself. And yeah, Trump jumped out to about a 700,000 vote lead as of election day. And then as they started to really get caught up on counting the ballots,
stop the count.
That's when you really started to see, you know, the numbers swing, especially, you know, with Philadelphia and Allegheny County, where Pittsburgh is being the bulk of those mail-ins. So as every percent of the vote was counted, you know, Biden was picking up anywhere from 30 to 50,000 votes on Trump's lead, and then eventually, you know, passed it. And I think as of today, you know, he's about 46,000 votes ahead, because they're still counting votes. I mean, there's just so many votes. And, you know, I was actually working out in the yard when they called Pennsylvania for Biden, pushing him over the number to make him the president-elect. And all you heard were just horns honking, people literally in the streets, you know, cheering for Biden, cheering for Harris. So yeah, we decided at you know, later on in the day to go down to Philly to see what it was like in downtown Philly. And it was a big party around City Hall. You know, they had closed most of the streets around City Hall, so you were able to just kind of walk around. And again, people were celebrating, people were waving Biden flags. You know, there were speeches, there was impromptu concerts going on. Like I said, we walked by a few of the wine and liquor stores, and there was easily lines 20 to 30 people deep because people just wanted to get fucked up on Saturday night and celebrate. The only place we saw Trump supporters was when we walked by the convention center, where they were counting the ballots. And of course, there was a contingent of Trump supporters there with their flags, signs. You know, one said Trump won, landslide victory, and surrounded just by a crowd of Philadelphians that at that point were chanting Kamala at them, and just really just. Not, I mean, people, the Trump folks were trying to give speeches and they were just getting just drowned out by the sheer humanity of it all.
I think it's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. What I think was interesting, and I you know, I've read a lot of, you know, it's still early for the postmortems on the 2020 presidential election. But I think what has been one of the areas which was I thought was very interesting as one of the indicators of why Trump did not do as well as he had hoped to or wanted to was that he had very strongly urged his supporters not to vote by mail.
Right.
That one of his selling points of his campaign was that voting by mail was an overly illegitimate form of voting. I mean, one of the things that they've done this year because of the pandemic is a lot of the states have changed the rules for how they were going to be accepting ballots because of the coronavirus pandemic. Trump interpreted that as these are states that are reworking their rules so that I will lose, because historically, Democrats are favored to vote by mail. Republicans tend to vote in person. So he took this as there's a conspiracy against me instead of, hey, it's just not smart to make all these people congregate in one area on one day. So he got up there and literally railed against mail-in ballots. So his supporters were not requesting mail-in ballots. They were not mailing in. So that on November 3rd, when the actual in-person ballots were being counted, his numbers were, they appear to be higher than they were as a whole, which has allowed him to, you know, start the never-ending tweets about stop the vote, liberate Michigan, Ron doesn't own 51%, you know, just, you know, arguing that if you did not vote in person on November 3rd, your vote shouldn't count. And there has been, over the past week plus, it's hard to describe it. I don't know how you would describe it, but he is clinging to this notion that the Democrats are stealing the votes, that they are, that there are millions of illegitimate votes that are being included in the official counts, but there's no evidence of this.
Right.
His lawyers are in court. His lawyers are representing. I don't know the quality of his lawyers. So I don't, you know, I've read articles that he does not have the best of the best, defending his point. But it's the fact that there are that he has not provided substantial. When I say he, I mean with however you want to look at it, the
Trump
Republicans,
let's say.
Yeah. Or the Trump campaign. Actually, it's not the administration's job to, to defend the election. But it's the fact that there is a seemingly a complete lack of evidence of voter fraud. Obviously, he's making allegations that there are. I take the stance, and a lot of people would probably disagree with me, but I believe that he has a right to ensure that the votes are legitimate, that the votes are correct, that the individual state laws are being adhered to and respected and honored. He hasn't given any examples of how they're not, which makes his arguments reek of illegitimacy at this point. A lot of people are saying, oh, he should just concede, give up, move on. You lost, you fucking loser, you orange son of a bitch, you piece of shit, you insecure man boy, your daddy never loved you because you were a worthless piece of turd that slid out of his asshole inside of your mother's cunt, and therefore you were born. I mean, like, it's like people have said some really...
Paraphrase.
Oh, yeah, no, these aren't my views. These are just things people have said about Donald Trump. Some of them, in my opinion, cross the line, are hurtful, are really angry. But it's I believe he has a right to sit there and say, hey, this isn't, you know, I feel this has been stolen from me, and here's my evidence. He has no evidence, and he keeps saying he's going to provide it. And it's pretty embarrassing so far.
Well, and I think he is, I don't know if he's 0 for 16 or 0 for 18 in these lawsuits, but yeah, I mean, these are lawsuits that are being filed, you know, alleging fraud. And then obviously when you file a lawsuit, there is a certain level of evidence you need to provide with it. When you allege fraud, you know, there is a higher bar that you have to reach. And, you know, these... The court cases aren't even making it to a discovery phase or a court phase because they're just literally being thrown out because there is no evidence whatsoever, you know, and we've seen examples. There was a Zoom hearing the other day where, you know, the judge literally had to, you know, educate, I don't even know, not necessarily educate the lawyer on the concept of hearsay, but basically, you know, the guy was, the Trump administration lawyer was like, well, you know, it wasn't hearsay. This person heard it from another person. And the judge was like, that is literally the definition of hearsay. If someone did not hear it directly, like,
yes,
you know this, you are a lawyer, you know this. And you know, Anton Scalia actually wrote in 93 for a case in front of the Supreme Court where, you know, lawyers have the capability of being punished, of being sanctioned, of being fined if they are filing frivolous lawsuits. And people are wondering, you know, when are judges eventually going to get tired of having their time wasted with these lawsuits that have no supporting documentation or anything to them.
One of the lawsuits that was filed, I do not remember which state it was. I want to say it was Nevada. I could be wrong. It might have been Arizona. The transcript was released, and it was early on in the week. I want to say it was Wednesday or Thursday. And one of the lawyers that was arguing Trump's point was arguing that the Trump campaign was not allowed observers to watch the ballot count taking place, and therefore the ballot should be deemed illegitimate. So the judge is asking questions. The attorneys who are representing the electoral board of that state provide the judge with evidence that there are Democratic observers and there are Republican observers, at which point the judge looks at the Trump lawyer and says, are there Republican observers watching to make sure that the Democrats are not stealing it? And the Republican lawyer said, there is a non-zero number of observers representing the Republican Party. And like that goes, that is almost as good as Bill Clinton saying, questioning what the definition of the word is.
What does the word is mean?
So the guy said that there is a non-zero number of Republican, and the judge literally responded, then what is your problem? Right. Question mark. And the guy had no answer to it. Like it's the very definition of baseless lawsuits. And I understand you've got a president who has a cult of personality complex that is going on, that has had 70 million people going out and voting for him. That is an enormous number of people. That number would have won in every other presidential election. By no means did this guy get slaughtered, embarrassed. There's no reason for him to not be proud of the number of ballots that he got. But there is a complete lack of backbone within the conservative party to stand up to him and say, you are not making any sense at this point.
Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous. And, you know, a number of the states just aren't even close at this point. Like they're contesting Michigan at this point, you know, even though there's still votes to be counted in Michigan, you know, Biden is up by almost 150,000 votes there. You know, he is up by 20,000 votes in Wisconsin. He is up now by 55,000 votes in Pennsylvania. You know, again, Arizona, I think they're down to about 1% of the vote there. You know, Biden still has 11,000 vote lead. Yeah. There. And then Georgia, again, still the shocker with about 1% left to count there also, 15,000 vote lead, which by law, right, you know, Georgia will be doing a hand recount of all of the vote cast in the presidential election. But there has never the margin of 15,000 that has never been overcome by a recount. You know, I mean, if you're in the hundreds, you have a potential of there being a shift. But when it's in the thousands, there has never been a situation of where a recount has made a change that significant.
Everybody keeps pointing to George W. Bush, Al Gore in Florida in 2000.
Right.
Bush was winning Florida by 538 votes at the end of the count. 500.
Right.
Not 1,000, not 2,000, 3,000, 15,000, 538, and Gore lost. Gore couldn't even overcome 500 votes in a recount, and right, they recounted all the votes.
Oh, yeah, and it was. I mean, how long did that take? I don't think we had a decision on that till early December. I mean,
yeah, it went a while, and so, I'll be honest with you. I remember being completely obsessed with the idea that the Republican Party stole that election. And it's just positive, willing to swear on a Bible, a Quran, a Torah, a Talmud, a Courtyard Marriott employee handbook. Literally, I was willing to swear on anything. And what was very interesting to me was, I think it was the Miami Herald went back and actually, after the Supreme Court ruled in George Bush's favor, the Miami Herald went back, contacted each county in Florida and did their and paid for their own recount of all the votes and found out that Al Gore actually lost by more than the 538 votes. Yeah, that actually the official count was in Gore's favor. That it, had they done a full, you know, statewide recount, Gore would have lost even worse.
So Billy asking again the real questions this week. Did I get over to the Four Seasons on Saturday? I got over to neither the Four Seasons Hotel or Four Seasons Total Landscaping.
Can we talk about that for a moment?
I would love
that. Might be, I believe that is the cherry on top of the Donald Trump 2020 campaign, which is by far has been the Trump administration has been one of the most dysfunctional administrations I've ever seen in my lifetime. It's possible, in the 1830s, there was something worse. In my lifetime, this is the most dysfunctional it's ever been. What went on with the Four Seasons in Philadelphia, I only you can tell that story.
Well, listen, for some reason, the Trump campaign wanted to hold some type of event in Philadelphia because, you know, obviously they felt the election was being stolen by all the votes being counted. So they ended up going someplace called Four Seasons Total Landscaping up on State Road, kind of in the northern section of Philadelphia. Now, I will give you my take on this. There are a number of people who feel that the Trump campaign tried to book the Four Seasons Hotel and accidentally booked this Four Seasons Total Landscaping instead. I don't believe that's the case at all. And I'm going to tell you why for a couple of reasons.
Yeah, please.
Number one, I mean, the person would have had to have been very stupid because the first time they would have picked up the phone and called, they would have been like, listen, this is a landscaping company, not a hotel. Secondly, it would not have made sense for them to try and hold an event at the Four Seasons Hotel because of the limitations in the city of Philadelphia. You know, the hotels can only hold up to 10% of their occupancy. So they wouldn't have even been able to hold the number of people that showed up at Four Seasons Total Landscaping. They would not have really been, you know, it wouldn't have been worth their while to do it. Plus, I don't think the Trump campaign wanted to get anywhere near downtown Philadelphia. Like, I just think they were scared. I think they wanted to go someplace, you know, the owners of the landscaping company, you know, are Trump supporters. They've donated to the campaign. I think, you know, they felt they were getting close to Philadelphia. They were getting in like blue collar area that supports Republicans. And I don't, you know, I think the mistake was, is I don't think the individual that booked this location realized that it was in between a crematorium on one side and a dildo shop on the other side. Which that is freaking hilarious. Like, it just, that does not get any better. The fact that you've got Rudy Giuliani and Corey Lewandowski just kind of hanging out and, you know, okay, we can go over there and get, you know, cremated. Oh, yeah, the sex shop's down the road there.
So you're saying they intentionally went to a Four Seasons Landscaping?
I'm saying, yeah, I
because Trump put out a tweet saying we are going to be at the Four Seasons major press conference tomorrow at the Four Seasons, deletes the tweet, then comes back and says major press conference at Four Seasons Landscaping.
Listen, there is no doubt in my mind that Donald Trump was probably confused, but I feel that the individual that booked it, you know, knew what they were doing, because it would have had to have been just too huge of a comedy of errors to try and book the Four Seasons Hotel and then end up booking this Four Seasons Landscape. And I think it is an unfortunate name that coincidentally is the name of a hotel in downtown Philadelphia. But
I feel
they intended to book that location, but I feel they didn't vet the entire neighborhood as well as they should have.
Oh, I don't think this administration has not done a lot of vetting. Let's just put that is not in their toolbox. By the way, speaking of Corey Lewandowski, tested positive for coronavirus today.
Yes, he did. So now this may also be a super spreader event. one of many that the Trump administration. Can we talk about the Fraud Street Run though?
Oh, yes, yes. And this is what I love about Philadelphia. Go, Ron.
All right. So we have an event in Philadelphia every May. It's a 10-mile run down Broad Street in Philadelphia. So it is called the Broad Street Run. And so somebody, and this is kind of wild, one of the two organizers is the guy that is the comedian that was teaching my stand-up class that I was doing virtually through Helium Comedy Club. So they apparently realized that the distance from Four Seasons Total Landscaping to Four Seasons Hotel is also about 10 miles. So they decided they're both runners. We should do a running event from Four Seasons to Four Seasons, and eventually came up with the name the Fraud Street Run. So this will be taking place on Saturday, November 29th. It is very informal. Obviously, it's not a sanctioned event, but you can run it, you can walk it, bike it. All of the our organizers are asking is that you make a $10 donation to Philabundance, which is our largest food bank in the Philadelphia area, as your entry fee, and just go out and have a good time.
It's 10 miles?
It's about 10.5 miles, so it's a little bit more than 10 miles.
And will people be walking it?
People can walk it. You can walk it. You can run it. There are actually local streets that you can literally just run along the 95 and get down to downtown.
Can people start it, walk a bit, get in a car, drive a bit, get back into it, and then finish by walking?
I think you can do it however you want.
It's a Fraud Street Run. Like, right. I would imagine the rules are a little loose on this.
And now people are pointing out like all the various restaurants and things. So people are kind of turning it into a food crawl because you have Sweet Lucy's Barbecue right there by Four Seasons Total Landscaping. Personally, my favorite wings in the world. Have I taken you to Sweet Lucy's yet?
Ron, first off, we went to a barbecue place. I don't know if it's the one that you're talking about now, but we're coming home from an event, and we stopped off at a barbecue and brought it home.
But yeah, I think that was Sweet Lucy.
Are you thinking what I'm thinking?
What are you thinking, my friend?
I'm thinking that you, I, and your wife do the Fraud Street Run, but we drive parts of it.
We drive most of it.
Basically, what you're telling me, it's the Saturday after Thanksgiving, correct?
It is. Yes, it is.
So, you know, for those of us that are employed, not unlike yourself.
Yes, of course.
If you have Ron's unemployment in your bingo card, please check off your box now.
Mark it off now.
Right now, Billy is right now screaming, bingo!
Billy's bringing up the good point that you can get a new fleshlight at the sex shop by Four Seasons Total Landscaping.
Oh, yes. Anyway, I am proposing that I come down that Saturday.
Okay.
That Saturday morning, I say we absorb the festivities. We take part in parts of it. You and I both know we're not walking. We're running 10 miles.
No, either.
Fuck that. No. But we get involved. We do parts of it. And we do this, we raise money, we accept donations from our listeners,
right,
and we donate it to a good cause. What if we match?
Philabundance, that is the official charity of the Fraud Street Run.
How about you and I, well, you're not working, so your wife and I, how about your wife and I match dollar for dollar anything that our listeners contribute?
I mean, if it's not shoes or nail polish, I don't know if she's going to really part with her money for it. I'm just throwing that out there.
Well, right now she's parting for you, all of your excesses, right? You know, I imagine your food, your haircuts.
Listen, I'm still getting government subsidies, so I'm not a complete leech on her yet.
I'm proposing, why don't we do that?
I'm up for it. I'll bounce it off her. I think she'll be up for it. And we'll probably do maybe some Facebook Live, maybe do some Instagram Live from along the route. I think it's a solid plan.
I think that's actually a genius idea. I would like to obviously we will social distance.
Right.
We will be wearing masks the whole time.
Of course.
We will do it as safely as possible. But yeah, I would actually like to end up at the Four Seasons Landscaping. That's a photo I think we deserve.
Well, you start at Four Seasons Total Landscaping and you go down to the Four Seasons Hotel.
So I have to carry all my sex toys and dildos all the way to the, like, it, no offense, but it's a little awkward walking to the Four Seasons Hotel carrying a bag of dildos.
Well, when we drive, we'll put the bag of dildos in the car.
Maybe I'll hide one in my butthole.
You could. It would fit. You never know. Hey, now. What else do we have this week, Brian?
I don't know. It's 50 minutes into this episode. I'm feeling good. This Biden blue champagne. Kick it in.
Can we hit some of the celebrity obituaries that we have to discuss this week, Brian?
Oh, the rap world took a lot of hits this week, Ron.
It did.
It really, you know, it's like the names, the losses. I know you were a big fan of King Von.
Yeah. King and I go way back.
King Von died at the age of 26. Getting shot outside of an Atlanta nightclub, because what are you going to do when you're in Atlanta during a pandemic? You go to a nightclub and get shot right outside the Monaco Hookah Lounge in downtown Atlanta. An argument between two groups of men escalated to two fights. A total of six people allegedly were shot. Three staying at the scene of the crime, three others running away, but still ending up at the hospital. Three of those shot died from their wounds, including rapper King Von. Ron, what would you say was your favorite hit of King Von?
I believe his remake of Put Him on the Glass.
Oh, so good. Do you want to play a couple seconds of it?
I'm afraid not, or else we'll get taken off the air.
Who else died this week? Somebody big. Was it Mo3?
Yo, Mo3 down in Dallas. That was rough.
You know, this one hurts. This one hurt me a lot. Mo3, rapper we all know. You know, to me, the biggest death of the week, A++, if you have to ask. And when I say Mo3, it's M-O and then the number 3. Put some spec on his name. He was shot in a brazen drive-by on a Dallas highway. But the deaths didn't end there. They go on. I know you were a big fan of DJ Spin Bad.
Listen, dying at the young age of 46.
Hurts. Shit hurts.
With Spinderella, but he was his own man.
You know, a lot of people know him as Spin Bad, DJ Spider. We knew him as Chris Sullivan. You know, no matter the level of fame he had, he was still true to the streets. Bless up, rest in power. You're going to be missed. And that concludes Celebrity Obituaries this week.
One more big one, Brian. One more huge one. Veteran theater actor Lawrence Clayton. He was in Dreamgirls back in 81. Did a 2015 revival of The Color Purple. Bells Are Ringing, Ain't Nothing But the Blues. Died November 2nd following a two-year battle with glioblastoma cancer. Very sad stuff. Very sad.
Oh, I just feel like the minorities were really took a hit this week.
Was that it? Did we miss anybody? Oh, Janelle points out we did miss somebody. Alex Trebek, host of Jeopardy.
Who's Alex Trebek?
Passing away at the age of 80 from pancreatic cancer that he had battled for about a year and a half. Definitely, 2020. And it felt very apropos for the year because it was a couple days after the election was called and we were all kind of feeling good. We were all happy about having a new president and vice president. And then 2020 was like, you know what? I'm going to fucking take Alex Trebek from me now. And it hurt.
What fucked me up on this is that we still have Pat Sajak, but we lost Alex Trebek.
Yep.
That's how you know 2020.
We still have Chuck Woolery, and we've lost Alex Trebek. Chuck Woolery is an uber-conservative D-bag on Twitter. And
didn't he get canceled on Twitter at one point?
He did, but he's back. So he
didn't he get coronavirus or no? Or his kid got... No, we talked about it. Didn't he, like, blast...
Yeah.
Yeah, fuck Chuck Woolery. Anyway, Alex Trebek, I mean, I wish there was some way that we could properly show some respect for that man. Because the number of hours that we watched him, he deserves something.
Well, Brian, if you will indulge me, and I know you are the master of the slow jam for obituaries, and I was not really able, I feel, to do a slow jam. I'm more of a balladeer. You know, I'm more of a singer.
We all have different styles.
I fancy myself, you know, kind of like a Michael Bolton or Robert Goulet, Ed Sheeran, that kind of mold of individual. So if you will indulge me, I put together a little video in tribute of Alex Trebek, and we'd like to play that right now.
Okay.
We lost our Jeopardy host. Ooh. We lost our Jeopardy host. Ooh. It's so sad. Hard to be funny now. We've lost a real OG. Had the answers and the questions too. It's Final Jeopardy. Best mustache in the biz. Made the rest look like hacks. We'll miss you, Alex Trebek. God should have taken half day. Jack. We lost our Jeopardy.
Oh, it came from the heart, Brian. I hope that people saw, and I know you're broken up. You're a little broken up now. I hope people felt
my
that.
Finger is wet right now. My finger is wet, and that's not the only wet part of my body right now. But that was beautiful.
We'll have that available on iTunes for purchase, 99 cents, I think. It's only right. We do have another clip of Alex Trebek here, which we should share. Someone put together a clip of Alex Trebek cursing, and it is kind of funny when you watch it.
24 hours a day, and call this number. You dumb son of a bitch, you don't watch it 24 hours a day. There's a daily cash prize of $1,000, and fuck, no shit. Call now and play Phone Jeopardy. She drank the poison that Captain Hook intended for Peter Pan.
Tinkerbell!
Fuck him.
He was one of those rare celebrities that you just really can't find anybody that can say anything bad about him.
Oh, I disliked him for years.
Really? How is that even possible?
Because when you gave the wrong answer, he informed you of it patronizingly as if he knew the answer from birth. So when he asked the question of this 18th century English poet was originally published by Oxford's Blue Pudding magazine. And somebody was like, who's Milford Keynes? He's like, oh, I'm sorry. It was your mother.
I'm sorry. The correct answer was John Milton.
But like he acted as if, thank you for being the English history, because the English major, because I was struggling to come up with somebody else.
You were.
But like he always acted as if the answer, the proper answer, was something he has known from like ingrained in his DNA. And you would watch it being like, who the fuck would know that? Like what kind of fucking, and you would know he had a writing staff that was writing these questions. And he has the answers written in front of him.
But he also was involved in helping write the questions as well.
And that is what you didn't learn until later on when you actually got a little bit more exposure to it. But as a kid growing up watching it in your like teenage years, you're like, who is this piece of garbage who's making these geniuses feel small?
Well, he recorded.
You know what the other thing was? I'm sorry to interrupt, but I got to say one more thing. Because it's on my mind, because I will forget, because my brain is shit at this point in my life. Is the fact that he had immaculate enunciation.
Oh, yes.
And that's where you understood that he was better than you. And it was probably why I hated him for being better than me. But it was the fact that anything in French, English, Spanish, Brazilian, Mayan, Italian, Grecian,
we get it.
Bulgarian.
He spoke French fluently. He was Canadian.
He had incredible, like, no matter what it was, it rolled off his tongue. Like, I would like to be with that man when he ordered a bottle of wine. Like, I would get, my dick would get hard. My dick would get hard if I sat next to him ordering a bottle of wine.
Well, rest in peace, Alex. We will miss you. And we will.
Can we do a toast? Can we do a toast for Alex?
I mean, my glass is empty, but I will raise it. I just finished it, but I will raise it to you, Alex. Again,
you have no refill?
I mean, I have to mix a new one, but you're, like I said,
whoa. What the fuck have you been doing for an hour? Have you been nursing one glass for the entire hour?
I've been drinking repeatedly. I've just
been okay. Out of sight. Cheers, Alex Trebek. I will fucking miss you.
Yes.
My question to you is this. What do you think happens moving forward with Jeopardy? Who do you think becomes the host?
Excellent question. That's what everybody is wondering. He did continue recording episodes up until his death. He's got 30 in the bag.
Much like rapper Mo3, he had 30 in the bag, but it was a much different type of bag.
Ironically, his last episode will air on Christmas on December 25th. I think they will probably go on hiatus for a bit, but yeah, I mean, there's been names kicked around. I mean, there's been talk of, you know, former Jeopardy champions like, Ken Jennings and, James Holzhauer. People have mentioned George Stephanopoulos would make a great replacement. You know, again, it'll be interesting to see. I think the show goes up. I mean, the ratings are too good. I think if you get, you know, a host that people can also connect with, you know, again, it's going to be tough. He did this for 37 years. Maybe Brian steps in and becomes the host of Jeopardy.
False. If I can make a suggestion.
Yes.
There is somebody out there who has the brain power.
Okay.
Who has the charisma.
All right.
Who has the pronunciation. Who has the ability to research, who is currently underemployed and has a lot of free time on his hands.
Are we referring to Donald J. Trump?
No, my friend. Talking about you.
See, I would want you to host it just because I think it would be refreshing for, you know, people on the show to not be able to get a question right. And you would just be like, you know what? I don't know the answer either. And I think America is ready for that. I think America, especially from what I've seen in this last presidential election, they are ready to connect with someone that doesn't know things.
If they did a version of Jeopardy for North Dakota and South Dakota, I am all on board to host that, in the sense that I would be a question. Somebody named Sam, so I'm like, yeah, sounds about right. Sounds about right to me. I can't argue. Can't argue against that. Fair enough.
We do have another clip, and there's really, I think, no context to this clip, but it's a clip that just made us laugh. It's a clip from MSNBC where the host in studio threw it to a reporter in his home who apparently thought he was having technical difficulties and was not on the air. But clearly was.
This time, it involves our intelligence community. Ken, what have you learned, sir?
Oh, shit. Fuck.
Okay. I think we lost Ken.
I think we lost Ken there. Classic.
Can I just say something?
Yeah.
you handle more professionally when my audio shits out and I have to bail out of the show to come back on. You handle that more professionally than Don Lemon right there.
I don't think that was Don Lemon.
I know, that's why I said it.
But apparently the reporter at home felt that his audio had cut out. Did not think he was on the air still. Clearly he was, but just classic. Should we play the dropped heart video too? Like, we've got all these clips and I don't
which
know.
Which one? No, but you have to give context to the drop heart.
Right. So there was this in California, I believe? There was a helicopter that was bringing a heart to a hospital to take place in a transplant operation, and it was being videoed. I don't know. It was a few videos. This is the weirdest thing.
There's always video. Right? People are always videotaping shit nowadays, which is why you should never murder anyone, because someone's going to fucking snitches.
So the helicopter, I don't know if it was a wind gust or whatever, gets tilted sideways, ends up crashing into the helipad on top of the hospital. Thankfully, minor injuries for the people on the hospital, or for the people on the helicopter, for the pilots and whatnot. And at that point, no damage to the heart. So now you've got the news, who is live on the scene. They've got cameras watching what's going on. And so you've got a doctor that picks up the heart and decides to bring it inside. And then, we'll let the news guy kind of narrate it for us.
Going here, man, suddenly hits his piece of metal on the ground and drops the heart.
And down goes the heart.
Down goes the heart.
So thankfully, again.
Can you show that again? I want to see it again.
Going here, man, suddenly hits his piece of metal on the ground and drops the heart.
The heart. On the floor.
And everybody just kind of looks like, did he just drop the fucking heart?
Drop the fucking heart.
But again, thankfully, and surprising, and this again, this will show you the resilience of the human body. The helicopter crashes, they drop it on the roof of the hospital, did not damage the heart. They were still able to utilize it for the transplant.
That speaks to the thorough packaging that Amazon.com takes in all packaged shipments that they take care of. I mean, you think that you order, paper towels, and it shows up and there's packaging. You're like, why? Oh, yeah, this is terrible for the environment, the ecological disaster of all this unnecessary packaging. No, when Amazon is shipping a human heart, they take efforts. They go, and that is why we should all buy from Amazon.
There you go. Anything else this week, Brian, or are we saving all the good stuff for After Dark?
Let's save the good stuff for After Dark.
All right. And just a reminder, if you want to join us After Dark, you have to be a Patreon subscriber. Go to RonAndBrianPodcast.com, upper right-hand corner. Click on Become a Patron. Obviously, all things Ron and Brian are at RonAndBrianPodcast.com. And as always, we ask that you go to our Apple Podcast page, leave a review. Don't just click the stars. Type out a review. Tell people why you love us so much. Brian?
And Ron, do you want to tell people what we talk about during After Dark?
I mean, we've got quite the lineup. I mean, if I can just pull some of the things.
Yeah, give us some headlines. Well, we save some of the salacious stories to go behind the paywall. Stories, it's not really appropriate for the 18 and below crowd that sees us on YouTube. But Rod, what do we got?
We're going to talk about Kristen Bell and her cornrows, if it's appropriation or not. Tesla has released Tesla Kila with a bolt-shaped bottle. You thought the fleshlight was something. There is an AI blowjob machine out there that we're going to talk about. We've got a Texas man charged with bestiality and a teacher jailed for sex with a teen boy student. A lot of stuff going on there. I did have a story, and we didn't get to it last week, and we're not going to get to it this week if we end now. We've got a few minutes. I just kind of want to get your take on this story from upstate New York, Syracuse, New York. You have two.
You love stories about upstate New York.
You've got two Syracuse school employees that were placed on leave after a photo showed them wearing No Lives Matter shirts as Halloween costumes. Now, on the face of it, sounds fairly horrible. But if I can give more context to it, the T-shirts not only said No Lives Matter, they had images underneath of Jason Voorhees from Friday the 13th and Michael Myers from Halloween. So there was a theme to it. It was more the horror movie characters making these statements.
I see nothing wrong here.
And that was going to be my question to you.
I see nothing wrong here.
The school district overreacted.
Yes, absolutely. If they showed pictures of dead white people and black people, there's an ill factor, a yuck factor, poor judgment factor. A horror movie, No Lives Matter, I see nothing wrong here.
And again, just real quick, Billy commenting on After Dark, it's when the gloves come off and Ron lets us all know how he really feels. It got a little, we had the pajama party the other week. It got
that was so much fun. And I've got to say this.
I think some people are still upset about some of the things I may have said or nicknames I may have given them.
I'm going to say this to you. The monthly pajama party that we do is a high point for me. And when I say high, it's not because I get loaded up on Oxycontins right before the show and I put four fentanyl patches on me throughout my body.
That's a good point.
But the after dark pajama party that we do on the final Thursday of every month, we may have to move Thanksgiving this year. It's going to be a little weird. Maybe we keep it. We'll see. Maybe we put it up for our list for our Patreon subscribers. But what we do is the last Thursday of every month, we do what we call our After Dark Pajama Party, where our Patreon subscribers are provided a link. They come on the show live with us. The way you see Ron, the way you see me right now, our Patreon subscribers join us and we all become part of the show. It's personally, the last one we did was such a fun hour.
It was a good
Some people were drinking, some people weren't drinking. We were all wearing pajamas. Some of us weren't. Don't miss out. Become a Patreon subscriber. Part of what we do here, the show, the research, Ron's mortgage, it's all covered by the Patreon support that we receive from you. I would do it for free if but I have a job that's paying all my bills. I'm not, I'm not depending on your, subscription money to provide me with a way of life. Ron, on the other hand, is in a different boat. He needs this. And I'm going to tell you something. I love this guy. You may not realize it. You may not see it. You may not feel it. I love this man, and I would do anything for him. And if that means that I do an extra 30, 45 minutes of material, of salacious shows about sex and pillaging and incest and booze,
all right.
And racism,
let's tell you
and
what, let's,
Jews, and
let's wrap this up and get ready for the After Dark. I think we've pushed it enough. I think we're ready to move on over to After Dark. Anything else this week as you take another swig of the Biden Blue Champagne?
The Biden Blue Champagne. I would like to thank our president-elect and his incoming campaign providing us with this very special Biden Blue batch that they put together this past week. Really good stuff.
All right. Well, we are going to get out of here. We will catch most of you next week. Our Patreon subscribers, we will catch you in a few minutes after dark. Thank you for joining us.